Hello, welcome to today's program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today with an article which appeared in the Arizona Republic on the 14th of April. The title of the article is White-Collar Job Growth in the United States is Slowing, and this was written for USA Today by Paul Davidson. Report could mean weaker hiring is ahead. The U.S. economy added a booming 303,000 jobs in March, a recent report showed, filling out the portrait of a stunningly resilient labor market that keeps shrugging off high interest rates and inflation. And yet, the job market may not be as hot as it looks. Professional and business services, a sprawling sector that includes most white-collar fields, added a meager 7,000 jobs last month and has created just 71,000 positions since last June. During the same 8-month period in 2022 and 23, the sector added 275,000 jobs. Worse yet, the current tally was pumped up by January's 48,000 white-collar payroll gains. But economists have questioned the employment totals for that month because of challenges the Labor Department faces early in the year as it seasonally adjusts the raw figures from the monthly survey. Professional and business services sector comprises 23 million workers in a wide variety of fields, such as law, accounting, architecture, marketing firms, human resources and consulting, temporary staffing firms, travel agencies, and office administration. In other words, it pretty much reflects the economy on a whole. If the economy is chugging along nicely, so too should professional services be showing the same growth. United States job growth, in fact, though, mostly has been driven by just four large sectors since fall: government, leisure and hospitality, healthcare, and construction. Local governments and leisure and hospitality, which includes restaurants and bars, have been catching up to their pre-pandemic employment levels. Healthcare has been buoyed by aging baby boomers, and construction hiring itself has been propped up by a dire housing shortage and easing mortgage rates. Analysts say that is not quite enough to juice hiring in the months ahead. A downshift could be a troubling sign for the economy on the whole and labor market because professionals earn among the highest salaries and provide a big boost to consumer spending, says economist Agron Nikaj of UMFG Bank. So, how long can 2 to 4 industries sustain the economic activity in the United States? He asks. Other large sectors have also turned in weak employment growth since mid-2023, or even longer in some cases, but they have been constrained by industry-specific factors. Financial activities have been hindered by high interest rates, the information industry by massive tech layoffs after excessive hiring during the pandemic, and manufacturing itself by a shift in consumer purchases from goods to services since the health crisis faded, and by high interest rates that discourage investment. Much of the shortfall in white-collar hiring can be traced to employment by temporary help services, which has fallen by 181,000 over the past year. Traditionally, companies cut temporary workers before laying off their own permanent staffers, so the drop-off augurs poorly for future job growth, Nikaj said. But economist Dante D'Antonio of Moody's Analytics points out that payrolls of temporary staffing firms have been declining for 2 years now. He says companies relied heavily on temp agencies when they could not find permanent workers during the pandemic, and so their payrolls have been returning to normal as labor shortages have eased. Noting the payrolls at temporary staffing agencies have slid below pre-pandemic levels, he also suggests that worker shortages may have given temp workers the leverage to ask their companies to convert them now to permanent staffers. But he adds, it is not clear whether this is enough to explain the trend. It's possible, he says, that the pullback in temp worker employment also is signaling wider layoffs ahead. Temporary help is not the only industry within professional services that is shedding or flatlining jobs, Nikaj said. Over the past year, employment has been unchanged at marketing and HR consulting firms and down at business support services such as call centers. Since July, payrolls have held steady at management consulting services. With the course of the economy uncertain ahead, many companies may be scaling back their outsourcing of services such as HR and marketing and shifting those duties instead to in-house employees to save money, Nikaj said. In the summer and early fall, professional and business services shed jobs for four straight months, a streak that normally indicates a recession, Nikaj says. But that is not currently the case, he says, because at least some of the weak hiring can be traced back to labor shortages rather than to feeble demand for employers. In February, the gap between job openings and hires was wider for professional services than it was for industries overall, he said. Still, employer demand for office workers is softening as well. Adam Morris, who is CEO of Sales First Recruiting in Portland, Oregon, said orders for sales representatives, account managers, and marketing professionals have been falling, and his company saw sales decline last year. So he attributes the drop off to a correction after a burst of pre-pandemic activity and hiring in 2021 and 2022. Morris says that applies to his own recruiting firm as well. He has 13 employees, down from 20 or so in 2022, because he decided not to replace those who left last year. And so far this year, business has picked up a bit, and he plans to expand his staff, but warily. All that said, there may be a silver lining to a softening job market. Recent reports revealing robust job growth and higher than anticipated inflation have led the futures market to push back forecasts for the Federal Reserve's first interest rate cut from June to September, and its estimate of 3 rate cuts this year has been trimmed to 2. If job growth lags, it could help to convince the Fed to reduce rates sooner, assuming inflation continues to ease. The following article is from the April 8th issue of the Wall Street Journal. This article was written by Harriet Torrey and Esther Fung, and the title is "More Businesses Are Offering Child Care at Work." Zach Wiley left his job at a coffee roastery in rural Virginia in 2021 because he found the 45-minute commute from Roanoke too onerous for him. Less than a year later, he returned to his former employer, this time moving his family into a house they bought in the neighborhood. What helped? The employer. Red Rooster Coffee offered subsidized on-site child care. "The child care is just huge. I don't know what we would do without it," said the 31-year-old, who pays $2 an hour each for his toddler son and infant daughter's daycare. "Our son loves it, and I never worry about him. He's right through the next door." Red Rooster Coffee is among a growing number of businesses in high turnover industries that are turning to child care as a solution for staffing problems. Restaurants, warehouse operators, and manufacturers alike are now stepping up subsidies for employees, contracting with backup care providers, and finding ways, too, to bring care close to the employees themselves. Executives see it as a way to reduce churn because the cost of searching for and retraining replacements has skyrocketed. In 2023, 32% of companies surveyed said they offered backup child care, up from 26% in 2019, according to an employee benefit survey of 4,217 companies conducted by the Society for Human Resource Management. Child care is an issue that has vexed U.S. workers since women entered the labor force in large numbers in the second half of the 20th century. Disruptions to staffing because of child care concerns have long been a problem for employers, and those issues have worsened since the pandemic. The labor force participation rate was 62.7%. In March, 0.6 of a percentage point below the February 2020 pre-pandemic level. Businesses have raised wages to attract workers, more steeply for blue-collar workers than for the broader labor force itself. Still, progress on drawing more people back into the workforce has been slow. During the pandemic, delivery service company United Parcel Service began offering backup child care services to about 300 employees working evening shifts in a sorting facility in Lathrop, California. The company, which has 414,000 employees in this country, said it has expanded the program to two other facilities in Ohio and in Pennsylvania. When the family member who normally looks after her daughter fell sick, Danielle McQueen took her then 8-year-old to backup care. Otherwise, McQueen, who works evenings at Lathrop auditing parcel sizes, would have missed work for nearly a week. It is a plus. It's a little incentive to stay at the job, the 34-year-old said. UPS executives said the benefit has reduced absenteeism and helped lower the employee turnover rate for them. "We were having absences from parents who were kind of embarrassed because of the stigma," said Danielle McCuster, president of UPS's Human Resources Group. Some businesses might bristle at the price of subsidizing care for their employees, and offering on-site care comes with its own costs and challenges as well, including those associated with licensing and finding staff. Companies with a workforce spread across the country also have to grapple with a patchwork of state and local regulations governing employer-provided child care. Many developed economies subsidize child care, unlike in the United States, where the issue is largely left in the hands of the employees and increasingly the businesses themselves. The U.S. Contributed $900 per toddler toward care in 2019, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the last year for which data is available. This compares with $9,000 in France and $16,100 in Sweden. The federal government is making this your problem by failing to make the investment it should be making, said Catherine Ann Edwards, an economist and independent policy consultant who specializes in child care. The Biden administration wants semiconductor businesses applying for federal loans under the CHIPS Act to outline plans for providing workers with affordable child care. The administration has also called for boosting federal funding to expand access to free preschool. Red Rooster Coffee, meanwhile, began offering subsidized child care in 2018 when that company moved to an 11,000-square-foot facility in Floyd, Virginia. Hayden Pausino Hensley, with his wife and Red Rooster co-owner Rose McCutcheon, had to decide how to use the new space. More of our employees started getting pregnant or having spouses about to have a baby, said Pausino Hensley, at the time the father of a young child himself. As a result, he set up an on-site child care facility, and locals can also use the daycare at rates that are not subsidized. Red Rooster hired a former teacher to run the daycare center and fulfill the licensing and inspection requirements. Still, Red Rooster subsidizes 70% of the cost of running the facility. It's basically an investment in our staff by the coffee roasting company, Pausino Hensley said. Employers, including retailer Home Depot, outfitter Patagonia, and hotel chain Marriott, have on-site child care services at their headquarters, but the benefit remains limited across the U.S. In 2023, 12% of U.S. workers had access to child care benefits, which was up from 10% a decade earlier, according to the Labor Department. Those figures reflect reimbursements for employees who pay for daycare or a babysitter for their children. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from the Wall Street Journal, the 30th of March. The title of this article is Fired Americans Say H-1B Visa Holders Took Their Jobs. This article was written for the journal by Newly Purnell. Workers accuse India's Tata Consultancy Services of discrimination. A U.S. visa program for skilled foreign workers has long stoked concerns over American workers losing their jobs to lower-paid foreigners. Now a group of experienced American professionals is accusing an Indian outsourcing giant of firing them on short notice and filling many of their roles with workers from India on H-1B visas. The American workers say that India's Tata Consultancy Services illegally discriminated against them based on their race and their age, firing them and shifting some of their work to lower-paid Indian immigrants on temporary work visas. Since late December, at least 22 workers have filed complaints with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission against TCS, whose clients have included dozens of the U.S.'s biggest companies. The American former TCS employees are Caucasians, Asian Americans, and Hispanic Americans, ranging in age from their 40s to their 60s, and living in more than a dozen U.S. states. Many have Masters of Business Administration or other advanced degrees, according to the complaints, which were viewed by the Wall Street Journal. While companies often conduct layoffs that affect workers with more seniority, the American professionals say TCS broke the law by targeting them and based on protected characteristics of age and race. They also say the company's move demonstrated preferential treatment to Indian workers in the U.S. on the coveted visas. A TCS spokesperson said allegations that the company engages in unlawful discrimination are meritless and misleading. TCS has a strong record of being an equal opportunity employer in the U.S., acting with integrity in its operations, she says. The complaints revive questions about how Indian IT companies use H-1B visas. The visas are designed for skilled foreign workers, but have for years led to concerns that Americans are being displaced by cheaper foreign workers with lesser qualifications. Companies apply for the visas on behalf of their workers and are not required to demonstrate that Americans with those same skills are unavailable. Mumbai-based TCS, part of the Indian conglomerate Tata Group, is India's largest IT services firm by revenue, with more than 600,000 global staff, mostly in India. Although the company generates about half of its revenue in North America, it typically employs a much smaller workforce in the U.S., comprising staff who often have face-to-face meetings with clients there. The Washington, D.C.-based EEOG, OC, enforces federal laws that prohibit discrimination in the workplace and can pursue federal charges. An EEOC spokesperson declined to comment, citing confidentiality. The agency last year sued Tesla, alleging black employees were subjected to racial harassment and a hostile work environment. Tesla has said it strongly opposes all forms of discrimination and harassment, and they have a record of disciplining and terminating employees who do use racial slurs and engage in other forms of misconduct. Cases brought by the EEOC can lead to financial penalties. Many big U.S. tech companies such as Google, Microsoft, and Meta Platforms, which have different business models than outsourcers, use the H-1B visas to employ staff who attract high wages and have come under less criticism. Congress allows roughly 85,000 new H-1B visas a year, with applications often far outstripping that number. The former TCS workers say that despite years of positive reviews and often bonuses for their work for clients in areas such as finance, operations, and supply chain management, they were abruptly taken off of projects last year. Many say TCS management thwarted their efforts to find new assignments at the company even when asked by clients to continue on their projects and were then terminated. Some said the work they were doing was taken over by younger, less experienced Indian nationals on H-1B visas. In their complaints, the former employees cited comments that TCS's global human resources head, Milan Lakad, made in an interview with Indian media last year. He said TCS is trying to reduce the number of Americans it employs in the U.S. and would like to provide more opportunities to Indians there, according to the report. One former worker said in a complaint that TCS human resources staff told employees in an all-hands meeting that the company planned to use money saved by closing down a unit that employed many of the American workers to provide jobs to more Indian nationals in the U.S. TCS has a significant issue on its hands here, says Peter Bendor Samuel, chief executive of Everest Group, which is a Dallas-based firm that advises companies on outsourcing, referring to the complaints. The law is largely on the employee's side, he said. In the run-up to the 2016 election, Donald Trump promised to tighten American borders, sometimes assailing the H-1B system as a cheap labor program, while at other times saying the U.S. needed highly skilled workers. When he was in office, he proposed an overhaul of the H-1B program that would have made it tougher to qualify for the visa, though a federal judge later struck down two of the new policies. Then in October, the Biden administration proposed changes as to how the H-1B visa lottery is run after the government found that companies had colluded to try to increase their chances of securing the visas. The next article I'd like to read for you today is from Wall Street Journal from December 23rd. This article was written by Francesca Fontana, and it says, "If these resumes could talk, the job candidate who ordered two steaks." Headhunters recall their wildest hiring stories from a desperate job candidate stalling for time to an HR employee who gave bad fashion advice. First, we asked recruiters and headhunters to share their wildest and most interesting stories. Question: What's an instance where the hiring process was derailed by an embarrassing etiquette faux pas? This comes from Ivan Adler Associates. I had a guy who was up for a partner job at a professional services firm, and the final interview was dinner with a client at the Palm. Apparently, the dinner wasn't going very well for the candidate, and so when the waiter came and asked, "Can I get you anything else?" the guy ordered another fillet. And so they waited until the candidate's other fillet came, he ate it, and they left. The next day, when I called the hiring manager and asked how the dinner went, his response was, "Well, he ordered another steak." I guess the candidate thought the repartee, the back and forth, wasn't going well, and he was trying to make some time to make the situation better for him. He decided to do that by ordering another steak, not another drink or another whatever. He didn't get the job. I had another candidate go out with the same client soon after that, and for the last interview, they were having dinner at the Palm again. And the next day, I called this new candidate to ask how that went. He said it was great. I ordered another steak. The hiring manager had told him the story about the first candidate over dinner, and they both decided they would tell me that in order to be funny. The second candidate ended up getting that job. And so now, every time I have a candidate go out for a final interview, that's a meal, I tell them that story. And then Anthony Fanzo of the Bach Rock Group says, a few years ago before COVID, I had an excellent candidate that we went sent to a client here in New York. The client, which was a bank, was a slightly more conservative company, and the dress code was extremely important to them. The candidate went in, aced the interview, and then she had a final meeting with their HR department with an HR person who seemed very inexperienced. During the meeting, the HR person told my candidate, "We really like you here, but we really need you to be more conservative. You really need to take out the nose ring." And so the candidate replied, "Well, that's not a nose ring, that's a mole." She got the job, but it would have been interesting had she not gotten the job. If that would have been prejudicial or not, it was a totally inappropriate thing to bring up. This is all we have time for on our program on careers today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day, and take care of yourselves. And thank you for listening to me. I'm a volunteer reader, Irene Lubin, and you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.